He's our voice of reason in the medical world. Dr. Fred Brown from Griffin Health talks to Melissa in the morning on WICC 600 AM and 107.3 FM.
Dr. Brown, are you a Chick-fil-A fan?
I have to say, I'm not really.
Oh, okay. I mean, so I have no problem with Chick-fil-A. I do tend to eat Popeyes. I think that they've got, I like their crispy chicken a lot, just saying. But I do know that Chick-fil-A is very, very popular in Connecticut, especially in our listening area. I mean, people go cuckoo-cachoo in the big old blue for Chick-fil-A. They opened up two recent locations in just the last year or so, one in Fairfield, the other in Shelton. And it seems like no matter what time of day you go, the line is just bumping. So we know that there's a huge love for Chick-fil-A. But recently, Chick-fil-A actually said this week that they are going to allow some antibiotics in their food items. The Giants said earlier this week on its website it is switching from no antibiotics ever to no antibiotics important to human medicine, which I'm not really sure what the huge difference is there.
There is no difference.
Okay, so that's what I was first getting at, is what is that big difference? And I mean, is this a common thing that we have in fast foods? Like, I don't know, it's kind of eerie to me to think about antibiotics and foods and things like that.
So, yes, it is actually pretty common. I actually, during the break, I was looking up who currently is using it. Burger King, Starbucks, Olive Garden, Panda Express, Little Caesars, Domino's, Sonic, Arby's, Jack in the Box, Dairy Queen, Buffalo Wild Wings, Pizza Hut. We're all given F for antibiotics and meat. So it's not just Chick-fil-A.
Why would you put antibiotics in food? I mean, granted, you just kind of mentioned off, I'd say for the most part, you're talking about quick drive-through, fast food, you know, places or quick delivery places. Why would you even put antibiotics in food?
It's actually interesting because there's two reasons. One is, you know, there is a thought that it will enhance the meat and enhance the growth of the animal. So that's sort of the first thing. Probably not as much as it prevents them from getting infected. So there's a lot of nuances associated with this, and sort of one of those topics that I'm very familiar with, considering antibiotic resistance is a huge issue in infectious diseases and infection control. So the bigger issue is that if you give animals antibiotics, the likelihood for them to get infected with a bacteria. Now, remember, antibiotics only work on bacteria. So to prevent them from getting a bacterial infection will limit that. So you end up having this antibiotic. You would have this antibiotic that suppresses any overgrowth of bacteria. No growth of bacteria. That means the animals don't get infected. That means you can actually put the animals closer together and not worry about necessarily having a bacterial outbreak. When you think about it, the other issues that have come up in the past are things that we will see downstream from this. So the two big downstream issues is antibiotic resistance, and we could talk a little bit about that. Mm-hmm. And the second thing is that by putting a bunch of animals together, you may be able to prevent bacteria from spreading, but you're not going to be able to prevent viruses.
So, okay, so if I'm understanding this, just putting antibiotics into animals, I mean, it's kind of the same, though, for people, right? I mean, like, you wouldn't just take antibiotics when you wake up in the morning. They're not, like, vitamins, per se. Like, I wouldn't wake up, if I have nothing wrong with me, I'm not going to just take antibiotics so that I don't get sick that day. You only have antibiotics to treat if you are sick.
That's correct.
So that's exactly what you're kind of saying, is we're pumping these animals with antibiotics and really, okay, so it might be masking something, but it's not necessarily, you know, going to keep your, you know, meat healthy, essentially.
Exactly. That's exactly right. And really what it does is it selects resistance. That's why in humans we only give it when you're sick or there's, you know, and we try, from an infectious disease standpoint, we try to only give it when you have a bacterial infection. Not a viral infection, because again, that's a big deal. So what happens is that when you get an antibiotic is really designed to fight off bacteria, right? But not all antibiotics cover all bacteria. There are so many different types of bacteria that are there that the bacteria that survive end up becoming even stronger. So one is that you select out bad bacteria. This happens in humans all the time. You can select out a bad bacteria, or a low quantity of antibiotics will not kill a common bacteria. And then that bacteria, because they have multi-generations within a day, they replicate fast. So the bacteria that you have in your gut will replicate every 20 minutes. So replicates means doubles every 20 minutes. So you can imagine if you have the if you have the food there, you know, or the nutrients there, then it'll continue to replicate. If you put a low quantity of antibiotics there, what will happen is that bacteria will then become resistant. And that bacteria has become resistant and has become really bad in the food industry. That bacteria is E. coli.
Oh, wow. And we've talked about that more times than I'd like to count.
Absolutely. And that's a very common cause of outbreaks related to infection. So the concern about antibiotics in animals, again, there's so many pieces that are there. But the one is that selecting out that resistance. The other thing is that antibiotics are not 100% cleared by the body or metabolized by the body. So when you take an antibiotic, even humans, when we take an antibiotic, that antibiotic, a percentage of that antibiotic will come out of our body still antibiotic. It doesn't change. So you'll end up having it in the body. The body uses what it needs, but we have an excess amount that's there. So we don't end up using the whole thing. So that molecule will stay present in our, you know, sometimes in our urine. So what happens is that we'll end up having antibiotics in our urine. The same thing happens with animals. So if you go and you look at, you know, you look at farms or streams down from a farm with after the use of antibiotics, you can find antibiotic in the soil and in the water, which is even more concerning because you think about it. I mean, you basically have the antibiotic that we as humans only use when we're sick is now floating around the water, and all the regular bacteria that have some sort of association are now getting this low dose exposure and developing resistance to it.
So, I mean, this sounds like a no-brainer. Why in the world would you do it? I'm wondering if, you know, do these fast food chains, like, do they just bypass health? I would think that most health experts would say this doesn't make sense. Or is it really just to basically bolster their manufacturing? All they care about is the dollar amounts, and they don't really care what that would mean for their products.
Well, I think we know the answer to that.
Okay, well, there you go. But this does lead to another really great question, Dr. Brown, which you said you guys are especially recently very plagued with people who are resistant to antibiotics.
Absolutely.
So is that because we are just a very medicine heavy society?
So it actually has to do with multiple reasons, and I could probably drop it to maybe three. One is we could probably put it in the category of veterinarian medicine, and that would be antibiotic use in livestock. So that's one reason why we see resistance. The other is that high utilization by us. So utilization outside of the appropriate use. So using it for overusing antibiotics, mm-hmm. By different subspecialties can do that, including vets. So different subspecialties that give antibiotics and not giving it appropriately, using it at lower level and treating with antibiotics for things that you don't need to.
We went through that, right? With the ear infections and all that.
Exactly.
Oh, my gosh. Amoxicillin they were using for kids who had RSV, which literally made no sense.
Exactly. See, look at that.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, so using antibiotics that are not, you know, not appropriate. And then, overutilization is a big issue that we potentially have. Now, it gets even more complicated, and I know I'm not trying to scare everybody here, but it gets more complicated because a bacteria can develop resistance. And then that bacteria, once it develops that gene for resistant, it can spread it to another bacteria.
Great. So
you can actually have a bacteria that is resistant to one antibiotic, get close to another bacteria, and share its gene.
Which makes other people sick. It's really mm-hmm. fascinating. And so, again, not that this is the only one. It certainly joins a long list of other fast food and quick service food joints across America. Chick-fil-A recently saying that it will have antibiotics in its food. And apparently antibiotic resistance in the human body has been a real issue for infectious disease experts here and across the country. Our own Dr. Brown just told us that. Well, there you go. Antibiotics, I tell ya. We've got Dr. Brown, who is here. I have a couple other major health news headlines. So We could go back to antibiotics on another morning if people want that. I do want to get to this story, though, because I do know we have a lot of WICC listeners who either they themselves or people they know and love rely on insulin. This week we learned pharmaceutical giant Eli Lilly says they have yet again a shortage, this time of two of their insulin products. And so I was curious, Dr. Brown, obviously people need to go to their doctors to find this out. But I was curious, what is the alternative? You know, we hear about this shortage for insulin. This isn't the first time in the last few years. What is the solution if you can't get that same medication?
So there's, you know, kind of good news, bad news in this aspect. The good news is that there are a lot of different insulins that are out there. So even though these two will be in short supply over the next month, there are other insulins that are available. So people will not go without their insulin. The problem is, there's a lot of problems. I quickly read an article about a patient who only has authorization for her insulin pump for those insulins. So to get that refilled with the medication, you're going to have to go somewhere else. There's going to be a significant cost if you can even get it. Mm-hmm. And then diabetics are particular, and those who have diabetes know this, that it really has to do with your body, and you understand not only sort of what you eat and how that responds, but then you know sort of the amount of insulin that you can give when you have that, or you are on a steady routine. Once you get that steady routine, you sort of know where it is. When you start switching insulins, that whole routine gets screwed up. And that can lead to particular issues about managing blood sugar, and can lead to potential bad outcomes. So I do advise people who are on the Eli Lilly products that they do consult with their endocrinologist or their primary care doc who helps manage their insulin and make sure that that's all sort of situated. Because again, they don't want to have the wrong insulin. So the problem is that you can get too much insulin, mm-hmm. and you can have a bad reaction, or you can have too little insulin, you know, and have a bad reaction. So between the two, and very bad, like get into hospital sort of reaction.
Oh wow!
So you have to be really careful about that. You know, your blood sugar could be really high, and you can go into something called diabetic ketoacidosis, which is particularly bad and needs to be managed in the hospital, and sometimes even in the intensive care unit. And then obviously getting your blood sugar, you know, giving too much insulin, your blood sugar can go really low, and that could be deadly. Mm-hmm. So again, most diabetics know this, and that's why they carry, different types of sugar in case their blood sugars get too low. But those are definitely dangerous. So this is one of those things that we spend a great deal of time focused on, those numbers to make sure, you know, that blood sugar level, to make sure that people are within those ranges so they don't have an extreme high or an extreme low.
Why do we keep having these shortages, Dr. Brown? Is it because that there's such an influx of people who need insulin? Like, why do we keep having? I mean, I know, like, when we had some of the shutdowns of we had other shortages, not this in particular, but it was because, you know, manufacturers had to shut their facilities down. Like, I know we've seen that before. Is that the same this time around, or is
it
because?
You know what? It's very interesting. We see this in medicines all the time, mm-hmm. that there's always some shortage. Look, we saw amoxicillin shortage. Insulin shortage. I can't answer that question for you. Those who are conspiracy theorists can kind of dig into that if they want. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, I'm actually a little surprised at this day and age
that we would have such
a shortage on something that's so important, so imperative, and actually gets reimbursed really well. So you'd be kind of, I'm a little surprised that we have these companies that are having shortages. I mean, it's so, you know, in this day and age of Amazon, it is a little surprising to me. I mean, this is the whole purpose of you know, industry and Six Sigma and lean processes to try to prevent this from happening. So I got to tell you, and again, I'm not undermining the complexity of developing these medications, but I am a little surprised, like you.
Interesting. Well, Dr. Brown, I always appreciate having you on to talk about our latest health news here and across the country. Thank you so much, and we will talk again soon.
My pleasure, Melissa.
All right, Dr. Brown of Griffin Health right here on WICC.